You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Arkansas is going to the College World Series. Razorbacks beat Tennessee over the weekend in the Fayetteville Super Regional. What a weekend it was. We'll discuss it with Bubba Carpenter on today's show, but first a word from Kendall King.
Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
So happy for, you know, everybody involved with the program, especially, you know, more than anything, the players, because they're the ones that do all the work. They're the ones that win the games. And so happy that, you know, they're going to finish this season in Omaha. I don't know. It just means a lot.
What a powerful moment yesterday when Dave Van Horn spoke about his team going to the College World Series. There's going to be so much talk this week about Arkansas and Van Horn, and is this the year? The Razorbacks are going to be the favorite going to Omaha in terms of where they are seated. Now, they got a tough first game. They play LSU on Saturday at the College World Series. We don't know the time yet. We know it'll either be a 1 o'clock or a 6 o'clock first pitch up at Charles Schwab Field. We think we'll know a first pitch time either by the end of the day today or early tomorrow. But it is going to be Arkansas and LSU. It's going to set up some conversations, I think, this week about whether or not you should reseed teams once they get to the College World Series. And we'll get into all of that here in a little bit. Bubba Carpenter's in studio with me this morning. Let's focus first, though, on the Super Regional and the wins over Tennessee. The Razorbacks win 4-3. And then yesterday went 11-4. It felt like it was a lot more lopsided than the final score showed. And you've been a part of these two. It reminded me of when they beat South Carolina in 18 and they beat Ole Miss in 19. And they get up big early, and it's like a 2-3 hour party at the stadium as they eventually close that thing out.
Yeah, but let's go back to that video right there. I mean, how can you not watch that and just love Dave Van Horn and just understand what this means to him and how hard it is to get to this point and everything that he pours into it. I wish the people out there, I wish the haters, actually, I don't even know if I care about the haters. They're going to hate no matter what, but people don't realize what these guys go through, Matt. And it's unbelievable. Like right now, I mean, people don't know they're in the middle of transfer portal stuff. So not only trying to maneuver through a super regional, they're trying to handle transfer portal stuff. And there's so much going on behind the scenes that fans do not know about. And I mean, that just shows you right there how much this means to DVH. And you know, and it's not just necessarily for him. It's for the state. It's for his players. It's for his family. It's for his staff. It's just if that doesn't get to you, then you don't have a freaking heart.
You know what else helps with the transfer portal? Being in Omaha.
Absolutely.
Playing a couple of high-profile games on national television when the ballpark was as packed as I think I have ever seen it. By the way, I know the attendance numbers don't necessarily show this. There's something going on, and I'm asking around. I'm trying to get answers on this about the attendance. And one of two things has happened. Either they have changed how they are announcing attendance, or in the past, they just totally inflated what they told us the numbers were at the ballpark. And I'm talking about 7 to 10 years ago. Because you can't tell me that the park was not as full as it was for some of these games in the past that have been announced at 12 and 13,000.
Yeah.
There were moments in the pregame this weekend when people could not move in the concourse because it was so full that, I mean, it was a literal traffic jam, and people were having to back up on either side to kind of make a – it was nuts. And you got ushers telling them, hey, you can't cut through here. And, I mean, like I said, it was as packed as I've ever seen it. You can always tell – and I sit downstairs during the postseason. I choose to. I love sitting down there. I love that angle. I love the ventilation that you get sitting down there during the game. But you really get a feel for how many people are in the ballpark. And what happens is a lot of times people will buy a hog pen ticket, and they don't want to go bake out in the sun, so they come stand on the concourse. And when you look over and it's like six deep on the concourse for as far as the eye can see, you know that there's a lot of people in the ballpark. It was a really neat atmosphere all weekend. About as good as I think I've probably ever seen at Baum. It certainly is testy.
Yeah, and they were just so engaged in the game, and I thought it was awesome. And, you know, I asked Phil at one point, I said, what was the attendance? And it was announced at like 10,000 something. And I'm like, there is no way there were only 10,000 people there. But it was awesome. The weather was great. And there was just a, you know, maybe it had something to do with Tennessee being in town, but I mean, everyone was a little on edge, and they were, you know, they were a little feisty, and, you know, it was funny every time like Andrew Fisher came up, I mean, loud boos, and he embraced it. I think he loves the attention. Tony V, anytime he came out of the dugout, even if it was just to grab a ball rolling by, the crowd booed, and it's just a, yeah, it was just neat to see them so engaged, and the players responded to it. They really did. I think they responded to this is a team that feeds off the crowd. I mean, it's fun to watch them play.
I thought this weekend was the perfect embodiment of what I've been talking about all year about how this is an all-around team. You know, I mean, on Saturday, help me if I get my days off. I don't even know what day we're on anymore. On Saturday, the pitching was phenomenal. A two-hitter. They beat Tennessee 4-3, a low-scoring game. And then on Sunday, pitching wasn't bad, but it wasn't great either. I mean, you think about like the last couple of innings. Parker Coyle needed 31 pitches to get through the eighth, and Christian Fouts needed, I think, over 30 to get through the ninth. They limited the damage, but the pitching just wasn't quite as crisp on Sunday. But the bats, I mean, this is what this team does. You load the bases, you'll, you know, little home run out into the left field bullpen. How many times have we seen that this year? And, you know, they get up on you, and it's that big inning. There, it seems like every or so many games this year, there's that big – it's like a four-run inning, a five-run inning, a seven-run inning or something. And it's like you blink, and all of a sudden you're out of the game. Once they got up 7-1, there was no way Tennessee was coming back yesterday with the type of arms that, that Arkansas had ready in the bullpen.
Right. And, you know, so I love to talk hitting. You know that. I could talk hitting with you. We could start the recording, and I could still be talking at midnight. I love the way these guys grind out at bats, and people don't realize just the value of working a walk. I mean, it's just you know, you go back to Saturday's game. You know, two out walk by Maxwell brings Ryder up. Ryder hits a 2-run homer. Little things like that get overlooked, and honestly, you can go all the way back to Saturday. What was it, the second inning, Cam Kozel scoring on a dirt ball that didn't get from here to that shelf. That's just a great read, and that's those little fundamental things. And we talked about it last week, Matt. Good baseball beats bad baseball. And not that Tennessee played bad. It's just that we do the little things right. And those little things add up to big things. And I know I sound like a broken record, but, you know, our players do it right. Like, his lead was on point. And he read the ball. He knew the ball was going to be in the dirt before it got to the catcher, and that's reading the ball in, reading the angle of the pitch. And it's just little things like that. And those are the things that impress me. Yeah, well, okay, home runs impress me too, grand slams. But do you know what I mean? It's those little bitty things. That was just one run, but that was huge getting on the board right there.
How about Arkansas winning this weekend when, you know, like a Vahevo Aloy, he didn't play bad. He made a great catch yesterday, by the way. I think the crowd, it took them a second to kind of figure out, like, what did we just see right there with that little over-the-shoulder? And, you know, I think they appreciated it once it kind of sunk in what had happened. But, yeah, he didn't play great over the weekend. But all the other – it's just like they're getting players who are stepping up and playing their best baseball. Like, Davalon's back to playing like we saw him whenever he was in peak form. I would say Kozel's kind of in a similar manner. Ryder Helfrich's playing as well as we've seen all year. And then you get Logan Maxwell. You know, he's looks like the hamstring is – the hope all year was let's get through the cold weather months, get to the warm, and maybe that thing will loosen up for him. And it seems like that's been the case. It just – you know, like I said, it wasn't a great weekend offensively, but they're getting enough production from enough players up and down the lineup that – you know, you don't have to be perfect 1 through 9.
No, you don't. And, you know, talking about Maxwell, you know, on game one Saturday, he draws the walk. Yesterday, he hits the big grand slam with 2 outs.
Mm-hmm.
Once he hit that, it was just kind of the nail in the coffin. Tennessee just wavered. They were flat from there on. They were done. I think, you know, just everything, all the stuff that they had done up to that point, the antics and the run in their mouths, they really didn't say a whole lot after that. I mean, mm-hmm. there wasn't much to be said. But I love watching Maxwell hit. He's what I call a professional hitter. I mean, just his approach at the plate, righty, lefty, doesn't matter. That was impressive. And the ball he hit out was a 1-2 fastball up and away on my zone. My zone's a 1-7 zone. That was a 7 at the top of the zone, a fastball with high carry, and he hit it out. It was incredible.
It was a good pitch.
Yeah.
It was just a better piece of hitting.
Yeah, dude hit his spot. That's where he wanted that pitch. Most guys swing underneath that.
Did you hear the – I know you've got headsets on whenever you're doing the games. Did you take it off for a second and hear the crowd – after that home run?
Yeah, it was crazy.
I tell you, and I like sitting downstairs during the postseason because you can also – you just hear things and you feel – it's just got a different feel when you're sitting there in the middle of everybody. And it wasn't quite Charlie Welch loud whenever he hit the home run against Nebraska in the regional. It was very close. It was very – I mean, that place went nuts when he hit the home run because it was like in that moment, kind of like when Welch hit the home run against Nebraska, it's like, okay, you knew they were going to go on. They were going to win the regional at that point. When he hit that home run yesterday, it was like the feeling in the ballpark was, okay, this is over.
Mm-hmm.
That you still got 5 innings, 6 innings, however many innings to go, but it was like everybody knew at that point, hey, that's the one that sent you to Omaha.
Yeah, I think so. And you and I – you always talk about taking this ear out. So what I've started doing in the booth is you can hear through the crowd mic, but you can't really hear everything. Mm. And so I've started taking this ear out because I want to hear the crowd. And I love the noise that the crowds make. But
I'm
like,
glad I've had a positive influence on you.
You have. See? You're rubbing off. But when he hit that ball, you could feel the noise. I mean, just the – it was crazy. And I interviewed him after the game, and mm-hmm. I said, I've heard some loud moments. That's one of the loudest roars I've seen. Yeah, and I don't know if it was when Charlie Welch did his. I had both ears covered.
Both ears,
but it was loud. And like I said, you could almost feel the noise mm-hmm. on your face. But that was huge. It was a huge moment in the game. And you know the fact that they walked Davalon to pitch to Aloy. Mm-hmm. I mean, Davalon's going to have that over Behava for a long time. I thought that was really cool. I mean, it's the right move to make right there. I mean, when Davalon's hot, there's not a hole in his swing. I mean, so I think they did the right thing. Aloy gets hit by a pitch, brings Maxwell up, you know, ball game.
You know, you talk about the things that maybe not everybody notices. Something I noticed yesterday is by the 6th pitch of the 1st, 2nd, and 3rd innings, they had Liam Doyle in the stretch.
Mm-hmm.
Tired pitcher, hot day. Of course, you know, he threw a ton of pitches. And when you're you're such a high octane guy like he is, I think that makes like 135 pitches to say Will McIntyre over the course of a weekend. I think that's a different recovery than 135 pitches for a Liam Doyle with how hard he throws. And so to get him in the stretch so early and keep him there and make him throw 21 pitches in the first inning and be at 36 by the end of the second and at like 61 by the end of the third, those are the little things that just really add up. And you want to know why he goes out of the game after, what was it, 73 pitches that he threw? Well, that's why. I mean, they just kept the pressure on him pretty much from the get-go.
Well, and it goes back to grinding out at bats. I know there was one point in the third inning I looked up and he was at 50 pitches, and I think we had a couple runners on, and there were no outs in the third inning. And I made a comment to Phil on the air about, you know, how many pitches he's already thrown. He doesn't have a single out in the third inning, you know, and he's already at 50 pitches. And you could start to see him getting frustrated because he's making pitches and we're fighting them off. And you know, once he started getting a little frustrated, I think the pressure got to him. And you know, he threw a lot of pitches last week, and he's a max effort guy. So to your point, I mean, he can't, you know, he's not a guy that can go out there and throw, you know, I mean, I think it started to wear on him. And I think he was frustrated the fact that when he would throw a good pitch, we'd fight it off.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that.
bomb is going to be for Liam Doyle, like Yankee Stadium was for Pedro.
Yeah.
Could have started chanting, "Who's your daddy?"
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he hasn't. Phil read off a stat. His numbers against us, going back to Ole Miss and then two starts with Tennessee, and they are not good.
I got him right here.
I'm sure you do.
You want them?
Yeah, let's hear it.
Now you put me on the spot. I'm going to have to find it here. Go ahead. Fill some time.
No, but, I mean, it's just, you know, he just hasn't done well against us. Yeah. And that goes, it's a tribute to our offense and the way we go up there and battle. I mean, the dude is good. The dude's really good. You know, I think he does too many things that takes away from the focus of how good he is. And I don't know. To me, some of that's a distraction. Some of that stuff where he wants the spotlight on him, and it's like a Fisher type guy. I think he does a little bit too much, and you don't do that. When you get to pro ball, that stuff tones down a little bit. The game has a way of policing it.
All right, three appearances at Baum for Liam Doyle. He was here with Ole Miss last year, obviously two times with Tennessee this year. 11 and two-third innings, 18 runs, 20 hits, 8 walks, 4 home runs.
Wow. Yeah, that's pretty impressive. Now, he wasn't the same dude last year at Ole Miss, but still, that's
it was still an abnormal start for him last year.
Right.
I mean, like every time that he's come here, you could put up the numbers that he had in Fayetteville and compare him to what he did the rest of the year, and it would stand out as a real blip on the radar, so to speak.
Okay, so think of all the best pitchers that have come in here, and look what we've done to them. And that's a tribute to this offense, to the game plan, to Nate Thompson, Bobby Warnes, the plan they put together. It even goes to – you can even backtrack to the scouting from DJ and from Zach and those guys. And, man, they just – it seems like when a number one dude comes to Baum Walker, they don't fare well.
You know what I liked? And this goes to what you're talking about, the scouting and the prep. There was that inning on Saturday where Tennessee, they made like 4 pitching changes in the inning because they were going right, right, left, left. Did you notice the 2 left-handers single on the first pitch that the guy threw?
Yeah.
They had a good scouting report on him. And then you take it to yesterday, think about Doyle's out of the zone, 6 out of 7 pitches, and has a little mound meeting with his catcher, and he comes back, and Charles Davalon knows he's getting a fastball, and he hits it off of Clay Goodwin's office. And there was another point in the game where I think they had a mound visit, and I forget who was at the plate, but it's the next pitch. It's a big hit.
Yeah.
They seem to have a really good feel for tendencies, and that goes back to the scouting and the prep.
Yeah, and hitting, I mean, it's a game of adjustments. You've got to try to stay with your strength as much as possible, but a lot of times you've got to adapt knowing what that guy's doing to you. And Davalon sat on that 2-0 fastball. He knew that was coming.
If he throws him a changeup there, he's on his knees.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but you know what? That's what you do with a 2-0 fastball. Yeah. You get that barrel out there and let it eat. But what I liked, the home run was awesome. I liked Saturday when they brought Arvidsson in to face him. He got a first pitch slider. And I meant to ask him yesterday if he was sitting on it. And I thought, no, I don't even want to talk to him. But, Arvidsson came in, and that guy's had good numbers against us. I mean, he's tough, big, tall lefty, good slider, good fastball. He set on the first. It looked like to me he was sitting on first pitch slider, dumped it out into left center for a base hit, and that was a huge hit in the game.
Just an all-around good weekend, all-around really good weekend for the Razorbacks. I want to mention Zach Root and the performance that he had on Saturday. And I think I've told you this. Have you noticed this year that whenever he has one good outing, he follows it up with another really good outing? Now the key, and especially facing who he's probably going to face Saturday night in Omaha, is can he put 3 together? Because I don't know that he's had 3 straight weeks where he's had good, good, good. But he did have a good outing against LSU earlier this year, so it kind of goes back to some of the conversation we're having last week about how do you adjust to what you did and what they did the first time you saw each other. But against Tennessee, he got out there and he really competed. And, you know, Tennessee, and they earn it, they've got this reputation as the team. They're the bully, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you want the bully to back down, you don't back down from him.
Right.
And that's what Root did. And, I thought it was the visual of him yapping at Fisher, who had been yapping at him. That was a moment where it was like Arkansas was like, hey, look, we ain't backing down from you,
right?
And that I don't know. It was a very, And you can say what you want to about what they were saying to each other, whatever, but just not backing down from Tennessee in that moment. I thought that was a very powerful image from the weekend.
Well, they kind of put the handcuffs on you, and there's certain things that you can't do anymore that we used to be able to do to control stuff like that. His, you know, Fisher's first at bat started the whole thing. You know, he didn't just take the pitch, the Soto thing. He kind of flexed. I don't know if you saw his. I mean, it was very, you know, I mean, you could tell he flexed and he kind of spit out towards the,
like, spit, right. I mean, Helfrich had to take his mask off because it got on his face.
Yeah. See, that's so. And next thing you know, you've got your starting pitcher throwing 99 miles an hour, striking him out. I thought it was awesome. But what really showed me, Root did it, the bunt play where he fielded it, came in and dove and tagged the guy
at LSU.
I've always liked him, but I'm like, I love this freaking guy. And any scout that, just the competitiveness. That's something you read the analytics all you want, but there's something inside of certain guys. He showed it in the sixth inning when he walked Keelan, falls behind Fisher 3-0, and comes back and gets the 3-2 count, throws a fastball. I want to say it was like 97 up and in, and gets the double play ball. And then that was the reaction that you're referring to. But to make those three pitches, Fisher was swinging 3-0. He just made a good pitch on him. That was awesome. I get chills thinking about it right now and watching him come off the field. And, you know, I don't care what he said. I don't care. I mean, that's emotion. That's your true emotion right there. And just bowing up and getting a job done. And I loved it.
That was as fired up as I've seen the stadium in a long time, because of course Tony comes running out on the field, and I mean, it was, everybody was ready to there were 11,000 people or 12 or however many people there were in this, we don't know how many people were in there, they were ready to go at that point.
I will tell you, back in the day, the benches would have cleared right there.
Maybe in a regular season game, maybe they would have.
Who knows? But that shows. I mean, I think that sequence right there made Zach Root a lot of money.
Well, it made him a lot of fans, I think, in Arkansas, too.
Yeah, I think if you're a scout sitting in the stands, you're like, man, I want that dude.
It was a great week for the Razorbacks. How about the way they celebrated yesterday? Running up into the stands, parading around the concourse. If you haven't seen the video, Vahiva Aloy leads this whole thing. They're on the field. They didn't dogpile. Number one, what'd you think about that?
I think it says a lot about this team, what they've got, their goal. I mean, did you hear my interview with Maxwell? I sent you the interview, and I asked him, I said, hey, you know, is this why you come to University of Arkansas for this right here? And he kind of looked at me like, no, we're not done yet.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow. I really asked him a stupid question right there, but he's like, yeah, this is cool, but this isn't why I didn't come here to win this. We're winning the whole thing. And that's the way the celebration looked. They celebrated, but they didn't, like, they didn't go crazy. We went to eat last night and I was talking to Logan Forsythe at a restaurant, and I was telling him about the, you know, how it wasn't a dog pile, and he's like, you know, I think that's, you know, it's kind of cool, you know, because usually it's a huge dog pile when you're going to Omaha, but these guys are on a mission, and I really think they want to win it for DVH. I think that's a big part of it, but yeah.
Well, you go back to that video, that soundbite that we played at the start, you know, whenever he chokes up, Davalon and Maxwell, their head just both kind of jerk over and look at him. It's like, whoa, this is different. And then Kozel, he didn't even look, but you can kind of see the tears welling up in his eyes. I don't know. And then in the, you know, the moments that we didn't, you can find that video on our website, but in the moments after, you could hear, I think the first question was, hey, you know, what do you think when you see, you know, how this makes your coach feel or something like that. And I don't know, it was very telling.
Yeah, it really was, and it shows how they care about it. I mean, Davalon reached over and put his arm on Dave's shoulder, and I liked whoever, I don't know who asked the question, but I think it was cool that the reporter, one of the guys sitting there, I don't know who asked the question, shifted and went to the players to give Dave a minute.
Well, they had to. That's actually how the press conference is set up.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I thought it was cool. They cut in, like, you know, to give Dave a minute. I mm-hmm. thought that was really cool. But yeah, the whole thing was cool. I thought it was awesome. But the and I put it out on X last night. I don't do a whole lot, but I put it out on there. I said, this is one of the coolest things I've ever seen at Balm Walker.
You're talking about them,
what Vahiva did.
Celebration. Okay,
yeah,
so
and for Vahiva to do that is like so out of character for him.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I've seen him before when they win, like when they beat Florida State in 04 here. This first time they'd gone to the World Series since you played. And it'd been a while, and they went around the perimeter of the field, and they're high-fiving, you know, as many people that can get down there as they can. But it's a totally different thing when you walk up, and it was just so cool. If you haven't seen the video, basically Vahiva Aloy leads this train. It's the entire team, and it's not just players. It's managers. It's Gage Goodwin is in there. I'm glad he made it back.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like everybody is in there. And they're going through the concourse, and I'm like I said, I'm sitting out on the concourse, and I just kind of, and I'm focusing on what I'm doing. I just hear this roar all of a sudden. I'm like, what is going on? I look over, and here they come. And I pulled my phone out real quick and got a video of it. But it goes all the way around the concourse, out into the hog pen. They jump the fence, go out on Razorback, take that little turn around 15th Street, and then Steel Eaves jumps in the Lake Norm. Lucky he didn't get a snake bite, I would say, while he was out there. But I don't know. It was a real neat deal. Just like I've never seen a celebration like that, and I just thought it was such a cool experience for the players to take it to the fans, because they have given them, and especially during the postseason, and I would say for the final couple of regular season series too, when Texas and Tennessee were here, just a really cool home field environment the last month or so.
Yeah, it was awesome. And I think I want to say it was Cam in the interview. He said, look, we appreciate these fans on those cold days when it's 30 something degrees and we're sitting in the stands. Sorry if I got that wrong, but I'm pretty sure Cam was the one that referred mm-hmm. to that. They appreciate these fans and how good they are. We talk about how tough the team is and DVH and the staff, but we got some tough fans too, because there's some days that are cold early in the year, and you know, you could sit at home and watch it on TV, or you can come to the stadium and they gut it out. So it's I think the guys really appreciate that. But I just thought it was cool that Vahiva was the one that led that. Well, I saw him walk over to the railing, and I'm like, oh, he's just going to do a walk around, mm-hmm. and then he heads up the stairs, and yeah. I tell Phil, I'm like, dude, they're going up the stairs. So I thought it was really neat. And I got a bunch of videos from a bunch of people that were in mm-hmm. the concourse, and it was cool.
You talk about the fans. Everybody talks about Dave Van Horn and wanting to win a national championship for him. If Arkansas wins a national championship this year or some year in the future, I think the people I'm going to be happiest for are the people who I know who do what you're talking about. They're out there in February when it's 30 degrees and they're wearing three layers.
Yeah.
And they're out there in October watching a fall ball scrimmage, you know, and they're there all the time. They're at the Swatters Club meetings. They're on the road when they go to Arlington. They're on the road when they go somewhere in the SEC. They're the ones who make it up to the World Series. This is a really cool baseball fan base. And I'm not saying it's the best. There are other good baseball fan bases out there, but like those will be the people that I will be happiest for when that day comes. The day is going to come. I don't have any doubt about it. You keep banging on the door enough, and you're eventually going to knock it down. But when that day comes, those are going to be the people that, you know, it's like, hey, good for you. I'm really happy for you.
Right. And, you know, there's still people that were coming to games back in the 90s and even as back into the 80s that are still coming to games. And, you know, I don't hope it doesn't ever get to the point where they can't afford a ticket, some mm-hmm. of those people, because I know there's people that they used to be there back in the day. I remember mm-hmm. in the 90s, like people lined up along the fence, and they're still coming to games and waiting for that big win, waiting to win the last game of the season. And, you know, we're 5 wins away from it, so let's keep rolling.
Did you see ticket prices for the Tennessee Super?
Yeah, yeah, I actually did.
I mentioned the other day, it was basically the cost getting into one game there was the cost of buying season football tickets at Razorback Stadium.
Isn't that crazy? You know, my wife looked at it and said, wow, you know, but it's not worth it. I mean, it's the experience, and I mm-hmm. wouldn't trade anything. You know, my two sons got to sit there, in Hog Heaven and watch the game, and Crystal got to sit in the booth. And it was just really cool. I mean, you always want your family there with you when something cool happens. I mean, we're not on the field. I'm just up in the booth. I'm not really doing anything. But to have them around when something's cool. Like, I videoed the celebration, and I've got Dalton and Cade standing in front of me. The only thing that was missing was Jordan, my daughter. I wish she could have been there too. But I've got them. You can see them in the foreground or in the front, and then in the background, you've got the celebration. So that's a video I'll keep for forever. Yeah. So hopefully we get to Omaha, we'll have that same video. Of course, the booth's a little different. So, yeah.
All right. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Razorbacks in Omaha, the road that still awaits them once they get up to the College World Series, and much more. But first, a word from Kendall King.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971, committed, professional, versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas, or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. I want to tell you, too, you can get the latest breaking news on all Razorback sports, and you can keep up with everything happening in Omaha at wholehogsports.com. Most in-depth source for all Arkansas sports, analysis, latest in recruiting, unique stories on all your favorite teams. Subscribe today at wholehogsports.com. I'm getting ready to go up there. Every year, I plan 2 weeks in Omaha. Now, it didn't always materialize, but it seems like when Arkansas gets up there, more often than not, once they get there, they stay a while.
Yeah.
There have been some 0-2 trips, but it seems like those have been more or less frequent than they used to be.
Well, and so I'm going to vent for a second. I don't like the way the bracket's set up. I don't think we should have been playing Tennessee in a super regional. Tennessee needs to be in Omaha. They're a really good team. I don't like the fact that we have to play LSU. I don't know. We talked about reseeding and all that. If we reseed, we're a one seed. I don't know. I don't like it. And I don't know, Matt, if maybe I'm a conspiracy theorist, but I don't know if that's the NCAA trying to weed out the SEC teams. But I don't think we should have been playing Tennessee in a super regional, and I don't think we should be playing LSU in the first game. And I mean, the three best teams in the country, right there.
I agree with you, especially about Arkansas and LSU. But so I look at this two ways. Number one, if we're not reseeding, I can understand Arkansas and Tennessee. Yeah. Tennessee didn't win enough down the stretch to warrant a real high seed. And so I understand why they got the 14 seed, and some of it's just luck of the draw, 3 versus 14.
Right.
Now, what I think needs to happen is after the regionals, you reseed teams, and then you send them off and make your matchups better that way. That would have avoided the Arkansas-Tennessee Super. And I certainly think you need to reseed teams once you get to Omaha.
Yes.
That's the one, and this really goes back – well, I think you need to reseed teams, number one. I think that that's just how you should do things. But this really goes back to Memorial Day when they put the rankings out, the seedings in the first place. LSU at 6, why? Why are they at 6? If you ask me, and we talked about this a lot in late April and early May, who are the best teams in the country? I think after the Texas weekend, I said, now that I've seen Arkansas play Texas head-to-head, I think the two best teams in the country are Arkansas and LSU. And I have continued to say that for, you know, what are we, 5 weeks now removed, right. 6 weeks from that matchup. I just think they're the two most complete teams in the country. You know, when they played each other in Baton Rouge last month, I know one game got away from Arkansas and they didn't play well on that one night, but the rest of the weekend was real competitive back and forth. And, I think you see length in LSU's lineup. Obviously, they've got the two great starting pitchers. I don't think their bullpen is as deep as Arkansas's is, but they've got 3 or 4 real dudes, you know, who come out of the bullpen, like Chase Shores throwing last night to send him to Omaha. You heard Ben McDonald say on the broadcast, like, He could be at the back end of a major league bullpen by September if they really wanted to do it. So, you know, these are two real complete teams. I guess where I have problems, in addition to not reseeding, is the fact that I thought, you know, like putting Vanderbilt number one, I didn't understand that at all.
No.
Putting Auburn at number four, I didn't understand that at all. I just think that, you know, at some point as a committee, and if you don't want to watch the games, don't be on the committee. You got to become less reliant on RPI and strength of schedule and these metrics like that in assigning seeds to the teams once you get to the NCAA tournament. And you got to turn on a freaking game and like, okay, who passes the eye test?
Yeah.
And I think if you were asking me, like I said, for the last 6 weeks, I would say Arkansas and LSU, Arkansas and LSU. I thought those should have been the top two teams in the bracket when it was announced in May. And if they were, they wouldn't be playing on Saturday night in the World Series.
Okay, so when they were the sixth seed, they were number one in the nation.
In
the
polls. Poll.
Yeah, in a poll. In several of the polls. Well, I don't understand that either. And I don't know if they're looking down the road and saying, okay, these are the matchups that we're hoping to see down the road.
It was the RPI. LSU's RPI was like number 10, I think, at the end of the regular season.
But, yeah, I don't know. There's got to be a way to take the RPI, the coaches' poll, all those things, intertwine them, and then seed off of that. Because I mean, the coaches are the one that are out there in the weeds. They know what mm-hmm. they know who's good and who's mm-hmm. not. And I don't know, man. I don't know. It gives me a bad taste in my mouth. But look, we beat one of the best teams in the country to get to where we are. Beat them handily. I feel good about it. I feel good. We know who we're going to face.
Arkansas has faced a tougher challenge in the postseason by far.
Oh yeah,
than LSU has. Mm-hmm. Little Rock gave them trouble. And this is no offense to Chris Curry and his team. They played great that weekend. They're not the caliber of Creighton. They're nowhere near the caliber of Creighton that Arkansas played at the regional. And West Virginia certainly is not the caliber of Tennessee, who Arkansas played in the Super. I think there's value in playing really good teams and surviving. Surviving may not even be the right word, because surviving makes it sound like you kind of slid through. Winning and getting to the next round by beating a really good team. They played LSU well in Baton yeah. Rouge. I could see this going either way. Cade Anderson's a great pitcher. If he's on, it's tough. But I like Arkansas's chances to get into the winner's bracket.
See, I like Cade Anderson pitches similar to Liam Doyle. You know, he's got a carry mm-hmm. fastball at the top of the zone. I think Cade Anderson's better. I think he's got better. His mound presence is better. I've never stood in the box and watched each one of them. I would rather face Liam Doyle than Cade Anderson.
Can I make a point here real quick? Yeah, I turned please. In my Dick Houser Trophy ballot last week. I felt a lot more validated after this weekend putting Cade Anderson above Liam Doyle, because on the day that I turned it in, later that afternoon, Doyle is announced as a Golden Spikes finalist. I'm like, am I missing something?
Yeah.
Am I missing something? But I go back to when I watched him, because I wasn't in Baton Rouge, but I certainly watched the entirety of that game. I've watched other LSU games this season, and then I watched Cade Anderson in person in Hoover. And when I have seen them in person this year, Anderson to me has been far more impressive than Doyle to me. Now, some of that may be the lineups that they're facing, but I just thought Anderson was a better pitcher than Liam Doyle this year.
I do too, and you watch him pitch, and Cade Anderson's under control, composed. He looks like a starter, looks like a major league starter to me. Liam Doyle, you can't run that hot. You just can't. You got to – if you're a starter, you can't. Now, if they want to put him at the end of a bullpen eventually later in his – when he gets into pro ball, mm-hmm. maybe that's a better fit for him. He pitches more like a closer than a – starter. I just don't think you can run that hot for seven, eight innings and get away with it. I don't know. But I watched Cade Anderson. He looks like a big league dude to me. But, like I said, he's a similar stuff as far as the fastball. I think he's got better. I think his off-speed stuff is, if he's on, he's really tough. But this, I don't know. It doesn't – this lineup, I believe in our lineup, and they're going to find a way. They're going to find a way to get it done.
Maybe there's a conversation there about you should put redheaded people in the bullpen.
good point.
Just a thought.
Hey, back in the day, we had Phillip Stidham, redhead. He's closer. some of the best numbers ever put up by a Razorback closer. So, yeah, maybe.
Hey, you talk about tickets being hard to get this weekend. I know Charles Schwab is twice the size of Baum, but man, when Arkansas goes up there and LSU goes up there, every time they go, they take over that town.
Yeah.
Now they're up there together. And, you know, there have been years when they've been up there together, but not a whole lot of them. And so that's going to be a hard ticket to get Saturday night. There are going to be a lot of people who want to be in the – I say Saturday night, it may be Saturday afternoon, but Saturday – there are going to be a lot of people in the ballpark wanting to see that one. Wearing red, wearing purple, yellow, whatever.
How many think will be there? 25,000, 26,000?
Oh, it'll be, yeah. That first weekend game, because what happened – remember when Arkansas played Florida State in 19, mm-hmm. the 1-0 game? There were like 27,000 people in the ballpark. I mean, they jammed. In fact, I think after that game, it was like, we shouldn't do this anymore. You got to cut it off a little bit because you couldn't move. You couldn't move. It was hard. I think, you know, it was a bad experience. There are people out in the they sell general admission tickets. And I don't know that they sell the GA tickets anymore, but they did then. So there used to be, at that time, the GA line would line up, you know, hours before the game, and you'd sit out there. They were still letting – that GA line for that Florida State game was so long that in the seventh inning, they were still letting people in the game who had been lined up all day trying to get in.
Yeah.
And what I mean by all that was on Saturday against Florida State. And what happens is that it's not just the fans of the teams that are playing. There are a lot of people in the Omaha area who they want to come and they just want to experience that ballpark. And so, yes, I think it's going to be absolutely packed in there on Saturday night.
Yeah, I think it's going to be crazy. I keep going
back to Saturday night, maybe Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, when do they announce?
A lot of people have asked me. Later today or tomorrow is my expectation, or tomorrow morning.
Okay. I mean.
But, I mean, and I don't pretend that the NCAA ever makes the decision that they ought to, but ESPN's involved in this decision-making too. If you're ESPN, wouldn't you want to put that on your primetime Saturday night slot?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it makes sense.
But two big-time pitchers, two big-time programs. I mean, the storylines write themselves for this game.
I mean, yeah, but ESPN doesn't always make the right choices either.
I know.
Our regional was on ESPN Plus, wasn't it, for the most part?
Well, every regional's on ESPN Plus. I think some of that had to do with the fact that there weren't a lot of other there was not another high profile team here in Fayetteville. I think if you get a high profile 2 seed, that's when you get your games put on the networks. And during that weekend, I'll say this too. That's also the Women's College World Series week, and so that takes up a lot of the TV inventory that ESPN has. So there's
all right.
That. They're trying, more than anything, they're trying to run a business. They're trying to get people to subscribe to ESPN Plus. And by having some of the biggest games of the year on ESPN Plus, that's how you get your subscribers.
Yeah, makes sense.
Do you have anything else to say about this?
I'm going to leave it at that.
I wanted to mention this, the brackets in Omaha. We'll find out who the eighth team is today. Duke and Murray State play this evening in Durham, North Carolina. That series is tied 1-1. Every other super regional is finished. UCLA beat Texas San Antonio. So UCLA is going to play the winner of this Duke-Murray State game opposite of the Arkansas-LSU game on that side of the bracket Saturday in Omaha. The World Series will begin Friday. You've got games between Louisville and Oregon State. And on the other side of the bracket, Arizona and Coastal Carolina. That's a rematch of the 2016 National Championship Series. More upsets over the weekend, Bubba. I mean, Auburn went down. North Carolina went down. Oregon State, that was a good regional or a good super that they had with Florida State. A couple of, I think other than Arkansas and Tennessee, there wasn't another super this weekend that had two nationally seeded teams. And then Louisville beat Miami in that other super regional. Your thoughts on how the bracket sets up?
I mean, I like it. I think we win game one. I really like where we're at. So, I mean, there's good teams there. Yeah, I'm pulling for Murray State. Mm. You know, I like the underdog. Plus, I played with a guy from Duke that I didn't like.
Uh-huh.
He's a big me guy. So, yeah, go Murray State.
Especially early in the season when they're playing those non-conference teams that we don't know as much about. I typically try to get on the phone with the coaches. And, you know, Murray State's come in here two or three times over the last, you know, 5 years or so. And I've really enjoyed the conversations that I've had with Dan Skirka, their head coach.
Yeah.
And this is a cool story that they're a win away from potentially getting to the World Series for the first time.
I think it's cool. Then we play them. We didn't play them this year. We played them last year, I think three games.
Yes.
And we won. We won all three. Yeah. But and I don't think they were like – I think one might have been a little bit out of – I can't remember. It's been a year. But I want to say two of them are pretty close games.
Mm-hmm. They're a good team. And if you'll remember in 21, they came in here too – and they gave Arkansas all they wanted in a couple of games in 2021. So they're a good team, good program. Dan Skirka, actually a little bit of an Arkansas connection. One of his first coaching jobs was as an assistant at Wachita Baptist not long after he played college baseball.
Sweet. Didn't know that.
Yeah, so he's got some Arkansas ties there. So, again, on Arkansas' side, you could have UCLA against Duke or Murray State, obviously Arkansas-LSU. On the other side, Coastal against Arizona. And Oregon State against Louisville. Can I brag on my son here for a second?
Yeah.
Do you remember what he told you the national championship series would be last week?
Louisville.
No.
No, I don't remember.
He said Arkansas, Coastal Carolina. He's been willing to die on this hill for about a week and a half now.
Yeah, I remember the Coastal Carolina, yeah.
And I told him, I was like, Jack, I don't think they're going to beat Auburn. I don't think that's going to happen. And then, lo and behold, they beat them 2-0.
Yeah. Yeah, beat him pretty good.
So, I mean, he could still get his Arkansas Coastal Carolina National Championship Series.
Be sweet.
There's also the possibility of an Arkansas Oregon State National Championship Series. what would the word be here, Bubba? Apropos?
Yeah, that's a good word. revenge. Yeah, I don't know. That would be.
In Arlington last year when Hagen struck out 17? I was there. And you talk about, like, it wasn't not at the level that the Tennessee game was this weekend. But there were some hard feelings on the Arkansas fans' part whenever they played Oregon State. And it clearly was, you know, related to what had happened in Omaha 2018. And there was a moment in that game last year where there was a pop-up and Arkansas didn't catch it. And the Oregon State fans who were there, they got on their feet and started applauding. And cheering real loud.
Oh, no.
Anyway, and then there was a moment later in the game where the same thing happened to Oregon State, and there's like 15,000 Arkansas fans in the building. I mean, the roar that came from them when they couldn't field the pop-up was that's just one of those little moments you don't forget.
You know, don't you love our fans? I mean, our
don't give it back
hardcore fans. Yeah, they don't forget. No. I mean, my wife gets on me all the time because I don't forget. I mean, I'm stubborn. I'm like a freaking elephant. I don't forget stuff. But yeah, it's cool to see our fans. They're fun. It was a lot of fun this weekend. I like some of their reactions. I liked it when Fisher threw the ball in the stands and they're yelling.
Have you ever seen that?
Okay, first of all, I've never seen a first baseman catch a ground ball down the first baseline, turn and throw it in the stands. They always throw it back to the pitcher or they flip it over to the dugout. Never seen a first baseman do that. But
He was trying to make up for his actions the half inning before.
I don't think he was making up for anything.
You don't think so?
He just wanted to make a show. He wanted eyes on him.
That's fair enough.
I mean, he is a me guy, and it's a shame because that dude's a really good player. But like I said, you get in a pro ball and you act like that, you're going to get a couple in the ribs, and it'll adjust that attitude a little bit. But, I mean, it's a shame because he's so good. I mean, the whole team is good. Tennessee's a good team, and I wish they didn't do all that extra crap.
Mm-hmm.
I really didn't. And watch our guys. We play. We have fun. I mean, we hit home runs, and we – you know, we celebrate them, but I just feel like there's just two different things. And I don't know. Even goes down to BP. They bring their own music for BP.
That bothers me. I've never seen that.
No one else does that. I mean, it's just, I don't know. It's just a lot of little things that add up. Hey, can I say one thing, though? A really cool thing after the game yesterday, you know, everyone had taken their picture and the families came out and the fans were all there. Nate Thompson got a chair and pulled it out, you know, in front of the dugout, kind of towards the on-deck circle, kind of, and just sat there.
Took it in.
And just took it all in. And I thought that was the coolest thing because that dude's – he's worn it. He's worn it when we've lost games. He's really worn it. And, you know, I just thought it was a really, really neat time. And I wanted to go down there and talk to him. I thought, no, I want him to just soak this up. I don't want to bug – I don't want to – interrupt what he's doing right there because it was just a neat thing. I almost took a picture and was going to send it to him, and I thought, no, they just that's him. Mm-hmm. That's just him right there. I thought that was a really, really neat thing. And I go back to the staff and you know, got to talk to Matt Hobbs for a little bit yesterday. And I love the coaching staff. And it's no wonder that the players are like they are. But it's because of the coaching staff. You're a reflection of the staff. And I think it's really cool.
That's neat. You know, the there's a lot of chaos after the games. players parading through the concourse adds to it afterward. But you know, it's like for me, I'm trying to get a story out and sending push alerts and email blasts and all this kind of stuff. But I did make myself take. There were a couple of times during the game yesterday where it's like I need to just take 10 seconds and just appreciate this, because I love covering games over at Baum. It's my favorite place that I go to cover any sporting event. And, you know, it's just like, I gotta soak this in, because this is ending. I'm not going to get this again until I'm back out here for a fall practice in September or freezing our rear off in January. It's everybody's got to take their own little, I hope people who were there yesterday did that. They just kind of took a second to kind of just take it in, you know, that whole moment, that whole experience. I want to say something about Tony real quick. You know, he runs a program that their antics and their actions, I understand why people don't like. I don't like it personally. Right. I like Tony. I like Tony Vitello. He was really good to us whenever he was here for 4 years. And I understand the booing and everything. You're trying to create a hostile environment and everything. I thought it was really cool yesterday how he went out, talked with Dave afterward, talked with Nate, talked with Matt, who, you know, he used to play with at Missouri, talked to Corey Wood. I mean, just everybody, you know, there's still probably a dozen people or more in that building, whether it be trainers or Mark Taylor, who, by the way, what a flex by him posting an hour after Steele Eves had jumped in the pond that he had the uniform clean. But I just thought it was – Tony got choked up in the press conference yesterday too.
Yeah,
he did. Talking about the people who were here and that mean a lot to him. And he said, you know, I just miss those guys a lot. I hope that people can see past the Tennessee annex and see that, you know, Tony is a big piece of why Arkansas has what they have right here. When he came in, you know, they weren't down, but they weren't up either. And he came in and he did a great job in recruiting some players who really he helped lay the foundation for that 2018 team that nearly won it all.
Well, and I think he, you know, the way he does things, the way his team plays, attracts a certain type of player that wants to be a part of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it is what it is. I mean, some guys want to be a part of that. Watch them come out with their BP tops. They're wearing the extra mediums. they're strutting around. They got their own music. They're doing their own
medium
thing.
I don't think I've ever heard of extra medium.
But, you know, and I think he attracts a certain type of player that's mm-hmm. like, hey, that's cool. I want to be mm-hmm. a part of that. You know, and it's funny. A real quick story. It's like, you know, Greg Baxendale.
Mm-hmm.
Like you get Greg Baxendale away from the baseball field, and you talk baseball. Him and I could sit and talk baseball all day on a baseball field. I don't know how many times we've almost fought.
He is as intense as they come.
He is. He just transforms into a, I don't know if I can say jackass. You might have to beep that out. But he is on a field. You don't want to coaching against him. You can't stand him. But after the game, it's all over. We'll sit beside our trucks and talk for an hour. But, yeah, I mean, and I see the same in Tony Vitello. Like, away mm-hmm. from the field, he's, like, awesome to sit mm-hmm. and talk to, baseball. Mm-hmm. Great personality, knows a ton about the game. But boy, on the field, once that game starts, it's like he does everything he can to get under the other team and the fans' mm-hmm. skin.
And it's unfortunate because not a lot of people have gotten to know him, I think, in the way that maybe you and I were able to get to know him. A lot of people, their only frame of reference of him is what they see on TV, what they see in press conferences, and, you know, certainly all the social media clips of Tennessee players acting like they're trying to you know, play for the Savannah Bananas, you know, I mean, so, but hey, I enjoy getting to see him this weekend and shake his hand and, because, you know, I think he did a great job when he was here. And he mentioned yesterday, Bobby Wernis gave him a long hug in mm-hmm. the handshake line. He said, Bobby is trying to send a message. And I think he didn't say what the message was, but I think I interpreted it that, hey, everybody, he's still one of us. He's part of the extended family.
Yeah, I like it.
So, all right, Bubba, we appreciate you being here. We're going to have shows all week. I'm going to go up to Omaha a little bit later in the week, so we'll have obviously some content from there. A lot of content on our website, I should say, at wholehogsports.com. Bubba will be back with us a little bit later this week to talk more about this Arkansas-LSU matchup in Omaha. We appreciate you being with us. Hope to see you tomorrow. Have a great day, everybody.